Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap on July 30th, 2015. I'm my ruler of time here alongside Rollo T. Chris, what's doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Nick. How about yourself?
I actually feel kind of tired.
Oh, no.
I traveled today, and so there's that.
Traveled as in, like,
I flew on
you were on the basketball court, and you were just like, fuck the rules to this obtuse game. I'm taking the ball where I want. And the ref's like, sir, that's traveling. And you're like, oh, I know. Stamp my passport, bitch, because I'm going everywhere.
And then he ejected me from the game.
Yeah, you were not allowed to play after that. But you stood tall with the pride that you beat the system.
You're like, is that how that works?
You were sticking it to the TSA. Even though they were not involved in that situation whatsoever, you still feel like you got the one up on
them. Going to the airport and you're like, ha! Fuck that referee. And they're like, sir, please don't curse in public. And also, what?
They're like, sir, can we take you to this room to beat you with batons? You're like, aren't you guys supposed to just question me?
No, we just beat people with batons.
Yeah, we don't even have to dance around the issue. That's exactly what we're about to do to you. And legally, you can't do anything about it.
So, I then, after this whole basketball fiasco, then I got on a plane. And I flew, and I landed a few hours ago, and I've been hanging out here. So, due to an emergency that came up yesterday, was not able to record the show at the usual time. So, in addition to just being tired from having to get up at a time I'm not used to, and, you know, traveling, also, I haven't had my usual caffeine intake. And the reason for that is that the airline that I flew did not have complimentary beverages. So, they're like,
what fucking airline did you fly?
A cheap one. So they were coming around like, oh, would you like a snack? Would you like a beverage? We've got Coke. And it's like, okay. Nothing's complimentary, though. It's $2 for a can of Coke and a water and any of our crappy snacks. So I was like, yeah, no, thank you.
That's when you fought against them. That's what
That's where I said,
you're about to see Airport Nick. Boom! You took out a basketball. You started dribbling down the aisles. You're like, you can't stop me. I'll travel all I want. They're like, sir, you're going to have to sit down. Or we're gonna do worse than beat you with batons. You're like, okay, ma'am.
I do hate it whenever it's like you're in an isolated situation, and so they pump up the prices on something that really should not be something they should be extorting you on. You know, soft drinks, you know, like popcorn at the movies. It's just like, oh yeah, it's $5 for us to prepare 10 cents worth of popcorn or some shit like that. Do you know how inexpensive a can of Coke usually is? That shit is like 50 cents, if that. And then it's just like, oh yeah, $2. But the one time it actually that has annoyed me the most was actually when I was at a community theater, because they were like, oh, you know, because the proceeds, you know, the profit we make goes towards the theater. It's like, okay, I don't mind if it's expensive. And they're like, $3. I was like, I really want that soda, so here you go. And then this old woman, this kind seeming old woman, took out the can of Coke, and I was like, yes. And she took out a cup. Filled the cup with ice, and she poured half the can of Coke into the cup.
Oh,
and she gave me the cup.
That's when I'd scream. That's when I'd go, I'm going to kill your children!
If I agree to pay the exorbitant sum when you have cans of Coke laid out in front of you, I expect to be given
the whole can
of Coke.
You better give me a bottle for this price. It's why, for many reasons, I won't go to Disneyland. I refuse to pay those prices. My family was very broken, and I never got to go there as a child, so I have no childhood memories of it. But mostly, it's because I'm too cheap.
No nostalgia, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, Disney has very treasured memories for me, except this supposedly amazing amusement park where people form bonds with their family for life at. We didn't have that. I had El Salvador, where there were cockroaches and divorce, so, you know, I get that to kind of, like, keep in and hold together for the rest of my life.
Welcome to El Salva Disney World.
Yeah, where the cockroaches are a ride of their own, really. they're big enough for you to ride on. I definitely would not recommend it. You should not ride them. They will bite. And they, contrary to popular belief, they will kill you with that.
On the positive side, there are no lines ever.
Yeah, no. Well, unless it's, like, a line to squeegee your car from a bunch of people who probably are jobless, but they also rob you if you roll down your window.
There is a line to get out of the country.
Yeah. And not a lot of people are allowed out. It is a very corrupt country.
God.
Anyways, Nick, how are you? How are you?
I'm doing okay.
We have a bit of a thing I guess we should probably bring up at the beginning of this.
It's actually pretty important.
Yes. We mentioned last week that Blip, our distributor for Weekly Manga Recap for quite some time, is no longer in service, and we've been talking on and off about having another option out there. We've had a lot of people talk about how they want to, you know, support the show and things like that, so we just opened up a Patreon for Weekly Manga Recap.
Yes, we did.
Yes, you can find it at patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. And for those yes, and for those of you who are unaware, because I imagine there are some people out here who may not know this service. There may be people out there, I imagine you've heard of it if you follow anyone from, like, the Channel Awesome scene, because this has been something that a lot of producers have gone into, but we might be the only ones you've ever heard of. You know, you might have just typed in Naruto into iTunes, and we popped up, and you found us in that. So if you are not aware of what Patreon is a service where creators basically crowdfund their projects, basically allow you to support them, and in return they set up goals for certain milestones they'll reach, they'll do certain things, and then you set up reward tiers where if you pledge a certain amount based on whatever criteria the person does, whether it's by product or by month, just for FYI, ours is by month, you get certain perks with it as well. So we set up our Weekly Manga Recap Patreon. We set up 3 goals at the time, and within the 24 hours of us having it up, we've already met 2 of those goals.
So now we're going to have to be like, shit, we got to find new ways to ask for money.
I do actually have other goals in mind. I didn't post them originally with this, because I was like,
There's no way this is going to happen so bad.
That, and I was like, I don't want to be the guy with egg on my face. And I was like, yeah, we have this $500 goal. And then, like, I post it, and, like, after a week, we have, like, $20. Like, 2 people are like, I'll throw $10 at you clowns. I'm just like, oh, that $500 really makes us look ambitious and silly now. But, yeah, no, we've hit the second tier, which is we're now going to be doing a monthly Q&A podcast as well.
Yes.
Because we have not been able to get to Q&As for a while, so we decided, fuck it, let's give it its own podcast. We'll start pimping a lot more to get questions on there, and we'll be releasing that. That's going to be completely free. As long as you're subscribed on iTunes or you grab it on Podbean, you'll be able to listen to that.
But there is another monthly thing that you can also get.
Yes. There are 2 tiers of payment at this point. I do have plans to maybe add more in the future. But at the moment, the $1 tier is the lowest you can put at. You do that, you'll get a shout-out on the show. We'll be doing shout-outs starting next week, because I want to give it a week to kind of get... I imagine the first one's going to be a whole lot, so I might as well just do them all at once. But the second tier is for $5 a month or more. At that tier, every month, you will then get access to an exclusive podcast just for people who are at that tier, which I call Champion Tier. We actually had one person comment, like, I'm supporting the show now and I request more Digimon jokes. And I was like, did you notice that the tiers are set up like Digimon ranks? I have Rookie Tier, Champion Tier.
Well, maybe that's what they're referring to.
I hope so. Because I laughed when I made it, and I'm like, I hope someone else gets some enjoyment out of this as well. But no.
Guys, there's going to be some people who are pissed off if we run out of tiers to go through, so we have to add, like, the baby and in training tier and bump everyone down.
Yeah, I'm just like, all right, you guys...
Wait a minute, you're saying I'm not champion anymore? I'm not fucking Greymon, I'm Coromon? Fuck you, I'm gonna take my money and leaving.
I'll just start adding fucking levels. It'll be like Mega, Ultimate, Fusion, Digimon, I don't know.
Well, they did that a couple of times in Digimon, didn't they? Because they did, like, the Mega, but then they also did, like, with the 2 Mega combining together.
Yeah, there was like, a fusion. Or DNA Digivolve, that's what it was.
Yeah, there we go.
So I guess DNA Mega, I don't know. I'm hoping I don't have to get to that point and do that much research into Digimon.
Mega Paladin form or some shit.
But, no, I do want to mention the bonus pod every month is going to be on a couple different topics. Now, I know some people, when I initially kind of posed this out there, people had questions on it. And these are questions I completely understand. Before anyone gets concerned, this is not going to be a podcast that's going to take anything away from Weekly Manga Recap. This is not going to be a podcast we recap chapters on. We're not going to be reviewing recommended manga on. We're not going to be answering questions on. All that, if you can't, you know, support that level, you're still going to get all that in the regular Weekly Manga Recap. Yes. We're not taking anything away. This is all going to be supplemental stuff. But our goal is also to make it, this is a really cool alternative thing maybe people have some interest in. We've got a couple different series ideas we're bouncing around on. I think we will actually try that one I mentioned before to you, next month or the month after that. But our first one is going to be a top 10 series where we're going to do a podcast, a top 10 on various manga topics. And our first one we're going to be doing, so if you're giving $5 in the month of August, you will get our top 10 manga badasses podcast.
Yeah.
Which, Nick, you've already done your version of the list.
I don't have my own list I'm going to throw into that. So just, you know, I will be offering commentary and insights on your stuff and saying why you're wrong.
There are definitely going to be those because I have watched your list, and one, you'll be like, you stole that one from me. You stole that one from me, too. That's not the best choice. You fucked that up. You're dumb. You're an idiot.
How did you... I only put 5 on my list, and you took all of them.
I will say I'll be putting some interesting choices in there, and I guarantee this is weekly manga recap. I'm sure we'll go off on some tangents and stuff like that, so it's going to be pretty goofy, pretty fun, and I'm pretty excited for it. And some people are already noting that it's going to be mostly JoJo. I want to have you know there are rules to my list, and one of the rules is only one character per series. So there will not be 80% JoJo characters, or what was more likely going to be 80% One Piece characters if I just pick people from, like, a bunch of series. Like, I'm just like, yeah, fucking all the Straw Hats are on here. There's 10 of them, right? Boom. Done.
So, yeah. And, so, thank you very much, guys, for supporting the show in every way that you do. I mean, not just, you know, becoming patrons on Patreon, but also just, you know, continuing to listen to the show consistently and sharing it with people and stuff like that, and leaving ratings and reviews and stuff like that. We appreciate our audience so much.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you guys are...
Yeah, no.
If I had to give it a percentage, I would say 10% of the reason we do this. Well, you guys are the reason why we bother recording it and putting it online and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, we could just have a book reading club and then talk to ourselves and think that we're funny and then not actually be funny. But, you know, you guys make the show what it really is, so thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely. It's extremely, extremely awesome, guys. I'm humbled by it, and our express goal is to continue making this an appealing option, not just, you know, for our end of things, but to make it so that you guys have something exciting, and if you're fans of Weekly Manga Recap, that there's a new option for you to enjoy the show with and to enhance your ability. So thanks for all the support, guys. We hope to keep giving you more in the future, like with this episode.
All right. So, we will be holding off on Shaman King for I don't know how long, but not going to do it this week. We're just going to head now straight into the recap portion, Weekly Manga Recap. First off, it's the last chapter in the jumpstart of Best Blue. He enters a tournament and he wins. He wins the race.
Oh, well, spoilers, Nick.
What if this is the first... He's done with his training, and they head to the mainland, and Coach's sister is like, my boobs are huge, and I don't know... Aren't you worried I don't know will rape me? You're not? Wow. Fuck you, bro. And then they're like, I don't know, you're going to be in the tournament, and he's like, okay, I'll do this. And there's a huge guy who's like, you're gonna suck. Ah, hey, Kagura. Nice, long time no see. And they're like, okay, go in the pool and race. And he does super well, and he wins his race.
And I mean, I guess you did sum it up pretty succinctly.
That's it. He won the race.
It's basically it, I suppose. I mean, you want to take the magic out of it.
Well, we're also introduced to, I guess, a couple of characters that may be recurring rivals and so on and so forth.
Well, I definitely would not make fucking Master Anoni or whatever his name, Onaga. I would not make him a rival, because he's already
He might be the butt monkey, but, you know, it seems as
what if
Oshiro is going to be important, for one thing. You know?
What if he joins the same swim team as Onaga? They're partners. That's possible.
I don't know. I mean, it's, the problem I have with this is, you know, an early chapter in a series like this, you know, you got to have the point where you just have a few chapters to establish, yes, the protagonist is really good. Because at this point, what we've seen from Ono is just him kind of proving himself to his coach through failure. And now he actually has an important success under his belt. He has beaten a bunch of his peers and showed that he definitely belongs among them. The thing is, though, I don't really get a reason why he won, if you know what I mean. Just, he trained and got better, and he's faster now. And that's basically it. We don't know exactly what he was doing. We don't know what exactly his technique change was, because it wasn't described, and it was done via montage and stuff. So this doesn't seem like too big of a deal. It's just kind of, well, this kind of had to happen to establish that Kagura's not wasting his time.
He's not a complete fucking goober.
So, that's, you know, it. And it's like, okay, well, you kind of ended the jumpstart run on a meh note, so,
I mean, I still like it. I do get what you mean, though. There is no actual, like, explanation as to what he did. For a sports manga, it's not really getting into much of the mechanics yet. I did think, though, there is one page that's pretty nice. It's not perfect, because the thing I need to eventually get in a sports manga is that moment that encapsulates why someone who's playing this sport loves it so much. Like, a scene that comes to mind is in Haikyuu, when Hinata goes up for a spike and he sees the entire court laid out before him as though he's flying. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at it from high up in the sky. And that moment where you're just like, holy crap, that seems incredible. The way you portrayed it all, that you've encapsulated why I would want to play this sport and why it seems so exciting. There's almost of a moment like that where he kicks off and goes into the race, and there's this big full page, not complete full page, but like a page and a half spread of him going swimming with this like big splash. But the faces in it are all comical, because like everyone else is like, look how crazy fast that guy is. And I almost wish this page or this chapter had just given us that moment when it's just this guy being like, I'm actually in a race swimming, holy shit, this is awesome. And
it goes by really quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, like it's most of the chapter is spent leading up to it, introducing these other characters. There's basically only three pages of the actual swim, and that's the end. And one of those pages is just the results. So, I mean, it's not bad in that regard or anything like that, and I imagine maybe we do get that moment in a couple other chapters from now, but I do wish we could have gotten that, because that's the thing that I think hooks me in a sports series. When you get that moment, you're like, oh, this looks fucking awesome. I need to see how this goes.
Also, I think that, you know, maybe doing it this way could have worked. I just know that it didn't work in this case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I guess that might be the last we see of Best Blue, but I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks in case they decide to bring it over on a permanent basis. In the meantime, let's move on to Black Clover.
If you do want to, by the way, guys, see it more.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You should have filled out the survey. Also, this week is the My Hero Academia character popularity poll.
Which apparently they're pulling us on. What the hell?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty sweet. We get to actually play a part in who gets to win. You don't get to write in your own entry. They give you a list, but there are a lot of choices on there. Like Recovery Girl is on there, and Tetsu is on there, which I had to really tempt my like hold my temptation to vote for him based solely on the fact I like to say his name.
Chin chin chin. God, yeah, you should just, like write in something like a bystander number 4 in chapter 68 or something like that.
I was contemplating, because it's like, you know, there's always like the character popularity poll results, and like if they give you like the full list, there's always like the main characters, and then once you get to like the characters who only got like a couple votes, there's usually like some random bullshit like mailbox makes it in there or something like that, just because someone wrote it in. I really wanted to be that guy who just writes in like fucking I don't know, like a bystander who, yeah, gets like hit by an ice attack or something like that. Just be like, Panda Man, just throw him in there. Like, fucking Koei's like, he's not even in this series. It's One Piece. I'm like, you know, he sneaks in around places.
All right, now let's move on to Black Clover, which has lots of exposition in the first few pages.
Holy poop on a stick.
I confess, did not read any of this.
I read basically the first two, and then I just skipped over like the next 7, because I was like, alright, I gather the rest of this is more or less the same.
If you don't recall, at the end of the last chapter was Asta and company basically they met up with the Wizard King, and he said, oh, this is what this item does, and so on and so forth. And then they said, oh, we want to be Wizard King. Or rather, Asta said, I want to be Wizard King. But Yuna was like, I want to be Wizard King. Yeah, that's what, yeah.
That's me too. What I need to do.
So, anyway, the Wizard King said, okay, well, can you guys outperform these dudes? And led them into this room where apparently there is now a distinguished service ceremony taking place. Where all these high-performing magic knights are receiving commendations and so on and so forth. People being granted higher titles as they're being promoted and stuff. So some of them are being promoted to, like, intermediate magic knights. Some are being promoted to a class of senior magic knight. And
well, that's the thing, because they introduced to us on the cover page this week the five tiers of mage. They're Wizard King, Grand Magic Knight, Senior Magic Knight, Intermediate Magic Knight, and Junior Magic Knight. And then in the description beyond that, they say that there's also five classes within each rank, you know, excluding Wizard King, because I can't imagine, right, they're like, I'm Wizard King 5th class. But it's like, holy shit, like...
Very long tier list, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's like, it's also just like, oh man, I have to follow, like, tiers within tiers? Like, I'm a 3rd rank Knight Senior Magic Knight. Like, oh fuck, what does that mean? Are you good? Can you just tell me that? Can't you give yourself a number? Like, I'm a rank 8 knight. And I'm like, I could follow that. 8 is a very high number. They're like, no, it's... You count up, stupid. I'm like, oh.
Damn it.
Then you suck. You're the worst.
So, the Wizard King congratulates the people who are there for the ceremony. And he says, by the way, we have some special guests here, so I hope you guys get along well. And all of the commended knights look over and see, you know, Asta and... You know, and everybody, and they're like,
fuck you guys.
And then they all go around and eat at the buffet tables and stuff like that. And the Wizard King's like, ah, I have to go do bullshit. Bye, have fun. Asta does shiny eyes because the food is good.
He's in love with the food, Nick.
I've never had anything like it. And then Mimosa is like, can I join you guys? I obviously have a crush on. And Asta's like, I'm oblivious to your feelings because I'm a shonen protagonist. Hi! Can we just, like, have, like, one protagonist who, like, gets it, you know? Like, just one. Just fucking one, please. Even if it's, like, the way Luffy eventually became with Hancock, where he eventually gets the realization, oh, she's kind of into me, but I'm not into her because I'm Luffy.
Yeah, what's pussy?
Yeah, you know, it gets to the point where he's like, no, I won't marry you, or something like that. That's fine, but it's just like, oh, will they or won't they? You know, she's got a crush on the hero, and he is oblivious, and that's the only reason why they aren't checking up. Fucking stop it!
Well, it's the start of this, Nick. You know, maybe, like, 2 chapters from now or something like that.
Street banging.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far. Maybe he's just like, oh, hey, you're pretty nice. I wasn't immediately going to go to, like, hey, you want to fuck?
I'm sorry, I went to, like, the furthest thing from what I was objecting against. Black Clover is no longer appearing in Weekly Shonen Jump due to ratings changes.
Due to becoming a filthy porno.
It's like, well, that never stopped to love her and shit like that. So everyone is all looking down on Asta. And what was the voice I did whenever people looked down on Asta?
They don't even have words. They just like,
So, first of all, not only are they looking down at us, they're also looking down at you, because, like, oh, you celebrate for having a four leaf clover grimoire! You didn't realize it's proper place! I would have done your mission better! You're impudent! And Klaus, who, of course, has learned respect for Yuno and asked everyone, and he's like, hey, I have something to say, like, hey, shut up, Klaus! Oh, and you too, Mimosa. You're a royal. What are you doing here? Oh, and you, Noel, because you suck. And Noel was like, oh, person I know. Other person I know. The third person I know who is even more important and has a braid dangling in front of his nose.
There's a braid dangling with, I guess, a cross that he hangs on the end of it. It's a rather interesting style.
I'm never going to forget who that is, I'll admit.
Yeah, I feel like it's...
And his name is Nozel.
It's like
he has something hanging in front of his nose, and his name is Nozel.
It's like, I didn't want people to draw attention to it, so I thought I would own it. I was really inspired by that speech that Tyrion has in the court scene, where he's like, if you control it, you know, you make it your own. And I was like, first and foremost, it didn't happen in the court scene, you're an idiot. Second of all...
Way to cover your...
This is not the way that happens. This is not what he's referring to. Tyrion doesn't walk around the sign on his neck that's like, I'm a dwarf!
Look how short I am.
And also, you could argue a lot of Tyrion's problems are self-inflicted. Anyway, you're an idiot.
So, Noelle is, you know, getting into it. He's like, oh, Big Brother Solid! Big Sister Deborah! Big Brother Nozelle! And she gets really intimidated, and she turns away, and she starts to actually basically do what he says, because, you know, he's like, oh, I'll beat this place, you failure. But Asta grabs her wrist, and he's like, you don't have to run from these jerks. Since they called you people here, I figured you must be pretty awesome. I guess I was wrong. You're no different from everybody else! Everyone in this world sucks, but I still want to be the Wizard King so I can protect them all. Because that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm the best.
Yeah. So, he's like, who cares whether we belong or not? So, you watch, I'm gonna... And he's, like, standing up on a table. And so, Solid is like, Oz! Sandbinding magic! Sandbox! Which is, like, the least intimidating name for a binding technique ever. But, like, a bunch of sand surrounds him, and he's like, shut up. Be quiet. I'm gonna suffocate you with sand now, apparently. Because, seriously, bro, what the fuck?
I'm Gaara.
Yeah. So, Asta takes out his sword, gets rid of the sand, and he's like, you listen up! I'm gonna pile up the results and become Wizard King and silence every last one of you.
Well, this did defeat my earlier theory that sword didn't have the ability to cut magic.
Because it cut magic.
Because it clearly just did so.
Yes.
Which does make me wonder, like, so did he just get, like, a much sweeter sword?
is there a reason why he should even have the original sword anymore? Because this one is easier to, you know, wield, because it's, like, a more traditional sword. It's heavy, sure, but, you know, it's more aerodynamic.
I mean, maybe he doesn't even have the old sword anymore. Maybe this just went and replaced it, but...
Which... you know, begs the question of why he had to find the sword as opposed to his tome just getting updated the same way that
other people's. Yeah, well, I mean, we run into the question of, like, how the fuck does magic work in this world a lot of the time, and
mana.
That's a question we'll get another time.
Mana!
How do you gain new spells? I don't know. They're just there. Shut up. But to the larger chapter, I did like this. It is traditional. There's nothing that's really new here, but seeing Asta stand up for his friends is an inspiring trait for him to have, you know?
It's nice to see him not having to defend himself.
So yeah, that's the thing. When he's like about, I'm gonna be the Wizard King and I'm super awesome, I don't give a fuck because you've given me nothing to really like about this guy. But if he's going to stand up for other characters, and particularly characters that I do have some sympathy for, I'm like, okay, this guy is an admirable dude and I can get behind him on that. And it doesn't come at the cost of anyone else looking bad, because clearly Noelle being terrified of her older siblings just, you know, obliterating her is something that she's shown to have some, you know, she's shown to have had a lot of fear regarding how she'd be regarded by her family before. So, you know, kind of seeing that is interesting notion, at least.
I'm sorry, I'm looking in the chat room and I'm seeing Yuno being turned into Frosh. He's like, Yuno thinks so too, Wes!
He basically should at this point. Put him in a fucking little frog costume and he's good to go.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, I mean, overall, I like this chapter. Again, it's not particularly original, and there's still some issues with it, particularly that beginning, where it's like, here's 2 pages of text. Did you miss Bakuman, the enormous walls of text you need to read to get through that? Here you go! For a bunch of characters you probably don't care about.
Except we're not quite as sexist. The thing about this is, yeah, I mean, you basically said it. Sometimes there could be an iffy character concept, and you don't even have to, like, completely scrap. You can just kind of tweak it a little bit, and that makes it a whole lot better. And I think that more writers should try and do that, you know. So, yeah, there you go. Go more in this direction with Asta as opposed to just... Oh, this is awesome! Shiny eyes.
I'm the best. Around.
And Wizard King. And, let's move on now to Bleach. 636 sensitive monster. Ooh. That's title track of my new album.
For your new band, Mexican Car Wash, I'm the sensitive monster.
It's about how, you know, we're all capable of doing bad things, but even monsters are...
Even monsters cry.
You're capable of feeling stuff, you know, man? You know?
Sometimes we all watch Toy Story 2, we cry a lot.
You know, I mean, how people would say to me, I was like, you know, why do you, like, insult all minorities and stuff? That's very monstrous of you. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm also really sensitive.
Like, oh, Hulk Hogan, your music moves me so much.
Let me tell you something.
I mean, brother. I wish you didn't have so many N-words in it, but still, very moving.
Let me tell you something, brother.
Let me tell you something, N-word. Like, oh, dear.
N-words don't understand, dude. How sometimes the Hulkster thinks of his daughter, Brooke Hogan, and the Hulkster gets really emotional, dude. And so that's why he puts her in charge of stuff she really shouldn't be in charge in. But you know what? It's better than one of them, you know...
Edward.
I don't want to say any of the possible terms. There's no way I could say that and then say, no, that's Hulk Hogan say that. It's like, no, that's just bad.
Well, it's somewhat amusing, Nick, because I mentioned earlier El Salvador, and when I lived in El Salvador... No, hold on, this all connects.
No, trust full me. Circle, yes.
Trust me, this will all connect. When I was living in El Salvador, I had a birthday when I was down there, and okay. I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan. He was my hero growing up.
I'm sorry.
It is rather tough right now to be like, oh man, when I was a kid, I fucking adored you. Now it's like less like eat your prayer, or say your prayers, eat your vitamins. It's not like N-word. And I'm like, I don't know if I can subscribe to these new tenets.
I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off here. People tend to not realize that in like 1993, when Hulk Hogan was going to face Yokozuna, he referred to him as, quote, Jap.
Look,
so,
you know what?
There are always signs.
He's from Florida. We all should have seen the signs. I guess.
Wait a minute.
But no, when I was in El Salvador, we got a birthday cake, and they gave him a picture. My mom gave him a picture of Hulk Hogan. Now, Hulk Hogan at that time, very tan, Nick. Very tan.
He's kind of always been tan.
Yeah, he's very. But at that time, when you got a picture of him, Hulk Hogan, very tan. Yeah. I got my birthday cake. It was in the shape of Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
It was a black Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
they thought he was an African-American gentleman.
From the reference picture because they weren't.
Yes, because they didn't know who he was. And they're like, oh, he's really tan.
My God.
He must be black. So somewhere out there, and I'm desperately hunting for it, there is a photo with me as a child with a black Hulk Hogan cake.
So you gotta find it.
And I'm like, I have to find it now. It's like, now is the moment. I might be able to, look, if I can't bridge the gap here, I can at least become an internet meme for, like, a hot minute.
Oh, God, that's so terrible. Like, all those people who are like, hey, you know, look at this picture of Hulk Hogan hanging out with a black band. See, he's not a racist.
Yeah, like, see, he's not a monster. What's this? Oh, that's not Jay-Z. That's a picture of Ernie Hudson someone didn't give him permission for. Oh. Hulk, you really shouldn't have tweeted that you just met Jay-Z. Oh. I want that to become what his Twitter account is. From now on, it's just him thinking he's met black celebrities and getting all of them wrong.
They're also just really tan people.
Or just, like, people who look nothing alike. Like, he's just like, yo, guys, I just met Omar from The Wire. They're like, that's Drake. They look nothing alike. So offensive, Hulk Hogan.
Hey, little Hulkamaniacs, I just met Morgan Freeman. He's got an awesome voice, dude. It's like, Hulk,
that's Phil Lamar. That was the Black Green Lantern. Well, hold on, Brother Jack, there's a Black Green Lantern? I'm not comfortable with this reality. It's Kyle Rayner, Guy Gardner, or I think there's a chick and a cat. Those are the only Green Lanterns I'm allowed to permit.
Oh, wait, there was also one in the 40s, too.
Yeah, Hal something. I don't have time for it. Whatever, just get rid of that guy. I don't feel comfortable with him protecting my national security.
It's like...
Is there a white cyborg somewhere?
I just met Barack Obama, dude. He's like, that's Macklemore.
He's not even black. He's very, very famously a white man.
But he does the music, though. I thought that... No, 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 Hulkster, no.
Hulk, that's not... synonymous with each other.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, Bleach!
Where were we?
So, anyway.
Oh man, that was so off topic. Holy shit.
So, Zaraki and Mayuri have come across Peridinas. And Peridinas is all, like, his head had got all big after Zaraki attacked him, and Zaraki's arm got all kind of messed up. And so they're like, what the fuck's going on there? And Zaraki is like, his forearm seems like it's unsuitable for combat at this point. And Ikkaku and Yumichika are thinking about potentially getting involved, but Yumichika's like, no, we don't have to. If we get involved, then the captain will just chew us out. And Nimue is like, yeah.
Ikkaku's like, yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
Ikkaku's like, voicing your opinion, huh? That's rare. And Nimue says, is it? I am always under orders to stay still until Master Mayuri calls for me. So it is.
Oh, hold on, wait.
It is rare for you to voice your opinion. So why did you say, is it?
Yeah. Well, we get another awesome moment of Bleach dialogue.
Yeah.
Where she's like, although I don't believe Master Mayuri would ever feel threatened enough to call for me. And Ikkaku's like, don't you know? Neither would Captain Zaraki. And I guess this scene is basically be like, oh, these guys are so awesome, they're not even going to ask for help from their subordinates. Which is like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like why people have ranks, to establish themselves as more competent than the people below them. But even then, I wasn't ever under the fucking expectations that fucking Mayuri was going to ask for help from his weird robot slave daughter thing.
And, yeah, it's like, this is stuff we already know about the character. It's like if, instead of Chad going, aren't we worried about what Ichigo will do, and Urahara saying, you shouldn't say things you don't believe about Ichigo, and then Chad said, yeah. And Ganju's that way, too.
Yeah. We all agree with this sentiment.
They're just, you know, making another pointless lap around the track here. Oh, God. So, Zaraki tries to, he doesn't get to do anything. Zaraki's arm just suddenly goes crazy and starts spasming around everywhere. And everyone's like, oh, my God, what's going on? And it just starts twisting around. So Zaraki looks at his arm and is like, I better put a stop to this. So he grabs it with his other arm and just tears it off.
He's like, F this. I don't need this fucking nonsense.
And he just, like, you know, takes his sword away from the hand that was ripped off, and his arm disintegrates into blood. And it's like, well, you know, it seems like this should have been awesome, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, if fucking an arm didn't get ripped off every volume.
Zaraki's so badass, he's so fucking metal, he's like, something's wrong with my arm, I'll rip it off with my bare hand! It's like, that seems like it should be awesome, doesn't it? It's just, but it's like, another arm got ripped off.
Well,
Who cares?
And I'm also sitting there, I'm like, Nick, if he's ripped off his other arm, how can he use both hands and fight at full power?
He'll never be able to use proper sword technique.
He's doomed himself.
So, yeah. So Mayuri spends 3 paragraphs too many talking about, oh, good move there, you know, sacrificing your arm so it didn't kill you, good judgment, you know, because otherwise your entire body,
blah, 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 you were going
blah,
to get killed
blah.
If you didn't
so,
do
Zaraki
that.
Yeah, just tell me what the guy's ability is. And Mayuri is like, I don't know if you're still talking to yourself, because I don't know, you know, just stay away from him.
It's interesting, they bring that joke back from last chapter, and you're like, did Kubo just think it was, like, a really hilarious last chapter for Mayuri to say, like, are you talking to yourself or me? Because I don't know the answer. Because he does it, like, 3 times in this chapter as well. But then at the end, it finally pays off, Nick. Yeah.
So, Zaraki pauses for seemingly 2 seconds as Mayuri says, you know, tie his arms so the blood stops. And then, I guess the blood stops. And then he's like, oh, how am I going to cut if I can't get here? And Mary's like, oh, here's another question. Well, I guess I kind of have to come up with the means of us fighting him. Zaraki's like, sorry, I was talking to myself there.
And Nick, there was a shaggy dog at the end of this story. I mean, it really just leads to fucking Zaraki running up and almost getting killed, but...
It was not a good payoff to that. It was just such a weird, awkward, like, speech to begin with. Whatever. So Zaraki's like, well, I'll just cut him in half before he can get me. And so he runs in and he slashes into Peridinas' giant swollen head, and he's like, yeah, I got him.
good job, me.
Things go bad, and you start to go, gah! So Mayuri stabs him in the back with his shikai. And so he's got, you know, paralytic ability in his sword, so it's like, this will stop his body from spasming around and ripping itself to pieces. But then he still starts to spasm a little bit, and so he's like, oh, I guess stopping the limbs only leads to other parts breaking. So he increases the paralysis further by stabbing his sword in the eye, which is kind of gross. And so Zaraki's body entirely stops moving, and so then Ryuri steps forward towards Berenice, and he's like, oh, he's still a useful tool, so I couldn't let him go to waste yet. Also, I think I know your ability, because it's nerves. You slip your own nerves into the enemy's body to forcibly control their movements. I could have predicted it. I've heard Quincy's turn Reishi into power by pouring into their own veins, so it's not strange to think that there are those who can control other parts within their bodies. Whatever the process may be, now that I know what it is, and the tentacles come out, and he cuts them with Ashisugi Giselle, and Perneus is like, ow! And Mayuri is like, your power is intriguing, so I'm going to enjoy testing it, because I have drugs for the nervous system. I'm Mayuri. I'm bullshit.
I do like, is like, he did one test, and it just happened to be the one fucking thing that works out. Like, we've seen that Bleach has, like, seemingly an infinite number, like, there's no limit to what these guys can have for their powers. I mean, it can be as obtuse or as defined as you necessarily need. It just so happened, he's like, alright, my one plan is to, like, stab you and, like, numb you, basically, like, anesthesia you out. Oh, hey, that worked. I guess your power has to do with the nervous system. The other guy has to be like, motherfuck, that is bullshit. You did one test and you figured it out. Fuck you.
I just want to point out, remember that awesome fight that Zaraki and Tosin had way back when, where, like, he had no sense at all except the sense of, Tosin's sword stabbing him, and so his eventual solution was, first of all, I'll grab you so that I can get you back. Also, next time I'm going to be so fast that before you can finish stabbing me, I will have cut you and you will not harm me. And then he did it, which means that he is impossibly fast and has insanely quick reflexes, but he did not see and thus could not defend Perneus attacking him, but Mayuri could. He just could. He's faster than Zaraki now, apparently. Because Mayuri's bullshit.
Basically, like, I'm very curious to what this dude's gonna look like, because I feel like there's nothing but disappointment about, like, around this court. I can't imagine, because it looks like his fucking mask thing is gonna break off, and he's, like, doing these weird sounds, like, how do you top a brain in a jar? Because he's got to be better than that. Like, I feel like Kubo has some stupid idea behind this. Like, it's going to be like a fucking, like a sock puppet or something. Some, like, crazy bullshit like that. Like, you weren't even a human. You're a dog. Like, ruff, ruff, what's up? I had a mushroom for a head. Or something just stupid, ridiculous. And then Mayuri's just going to beat him. Because that's how this is going to end. But I'm excited on the principle of, like, oh, I want Kubo to outdo himself next week. Like, I need this to be just the most ridiculous concept he could have thought of.
Which is stupid. Let's move on.
Yeah, it was a bad chapter, by the way. So we'll move on to Fairy Tale, chapter 446, The Land the Gods Abandoned. So last time
has a fucking awesome cover page.
You that excited by it?
I really like it. I think it looks awesome. It's like a movie poster.
It's cool in the fact that, like, it's not like ridiculous amounts of fan service or anything like that. So I'm pretty happy for that improvement. Yeah, I mean, to that regard, it's kind of cool. It'd be like a slight bit more awesome if this wasn't the chapter it was in, where these big threats behind him suddenly seemed a lot less intimidating. But we'll get to that in a second.
Well, one of them seems a lot less intimidating.
Well, they're all supposed to be on the same scale, so...
At least Shrink Stuff Girl still hasn't been beaten yet.
Yeah. So last week, as you'll recall, everything was rendered fucking pointless because apparently Dornbolt can teleport in and just bamf people out of where they were. So we pick up on that point where Makarov is talking to the guild, and he's like, "Oh, if you're all here, then that means you must have heard the situation, but I didn't consider this deeply enough that I had no intention of negotiating from the start after
Wait a minute. Why are the girls wearing swimsuits?
Yes.
Are we going swimming?
I notice all the boys are in their clothes, but...
Yeah.
I don't even know this cat girl.
I mean, I'm used to Lucy just, you know, dressing this way on occasion, and Erza can I just change her clothes all the time, but... Put some fucking clothes on, Wendy. Seriously, what the fuck?
Good lord. There's not even a swimming pool around here. This is very inappropriate. Like, it'd be like if we were at a French maid convention and you were wearing a cowboy outfit. Like, yes, your fetish outfit is very adorable. Wrong moment for it. It's not even a cowboy around here.
But we lost... Our ship sank, and so we lost our clothes. But where did not Suze and Grace come from?
Doesn't one of you have some bullshit tangential ability to make clothes at this point? Like, isn't there, like, a seamstress Lucy costume of somewhere? I must have something like that.
God damn it. Anyway, so I didn't know that Zara was friggin'.
Anyway, I fucked things up. It was all meaningless. What a terrible feeling. Tear it up.
Also, I disbanded the guild for apparently no reason.
Yeah. His quote of "it was all meaningless" was just like what I felt like the past 4 months of Fairy Tail combined have been. Like, what was the point of any of this? None of this needed to happen.
And if anyone besides Erza had said, "No, it wasn't meaningless," I would think, "Oh, they're just trying to comfort the old man, you know?" And instead, it's just like, no, Erza probably does believe that because she's fucking Erza.
Yeah, well, they all have, like, you know, comments to say about it. Like, Ray's like, "Oh, meaningless, that's a laugh. This year made us all that much more mature. You know, being directionless, split apart from each other, some of us not taking jobs, some of us taking jobs that are completely contrary to the field of magic improvement, like Lucy." And, you know, Lucy's like, "And after that, we were still able to form up as a guild."
I can't believe Lucy's not pissed off at him.
Yeah, well...
I can, but it's just like...
Why? Does she have an angry bone in her body? Didn't her dad come back? And she was still like, I like you, Dad, so...
It's one of those things where it's like, she was, you know, agonizing over Fairytale being gone, and she obsessed over for the entire time they were apart.
Whoa, Nick, hold.
And then it turns out...
You expect Hero to remember something he wrote, like, 3 months ago?
Well, he'll remember what erotic poses he
wrote in, I'm sure. That's when he'll be like, Lucy's like, there were so many erotic poses I was in.
Well, I know that she was wearing a towel.
Yes, I remember specifically she left the shower. How many shots of her almost butt was I able to get out of that?
Almost butt.
Erza says, though, "I must believe that when one commits an act out of love, it has meaning, since that is what you taught me." And then Natsu extends a hand, and he's like, "Come on, Gramps, let's go back to Fairy Tail." And then specifically the moment comes up where fucking Charlotte's like, "Hey, what's, you know, we got a lot to talk about." And Michael's like, "The fuck's this?" Which I was really hoping he'd say when Dornbolt talked to him next. He's like, "I don't remember this guy either."
Oh, right. Erased your memory. Right.
But Dornbolt explains, Nick, that, you know, his super awesome magic teleporting power he just showed off.
Used up all my charges, bro. I gotta sit here and I gotta recover.
He can't do that no more. He's done now. He had one shot to do it and he's like, "Oh, now I'm exhausted." I know other times when people need magic, they just kind of gain it, but oof, I am pooped. So they're like, "Oh, well, we'll just, you know, take our own way back." But before they can do so, they are interrupted by the Desert King. Something another. Ajeel, that's his name, I think. Or Bakarov's just screaming out random words. I think it's Ajeel, though. I remember he's the Desert King, because he's the guy who was introduced to
us. And
he's just screaming, "Desert!" Which I'm really disappointed, because he does not have as much of a wacky desert gimmick this time around. Like, he's not like, "Where are you guys going?" It's like, you know, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a wacky desert pun. You could be like, "Leaving so Dune," or something stupid like that. Like, he's like, I'm gonna sarcophagus you! And I'm like, that's not even a pun.
That doesn't make any sense.
He's like, Scorpion! You're not even trying anymore. But no, everyone's super shocked.
It looks
shocked.
Like there's more going on here than meets the cacti.
That's when, like, one person's like, I gotta give him a little bit of credit for that one. He developed that out of nowhere. He started saying it, and I was like, where's this gonna go? Is this a mummy pun? Maybe something on Egypt
this
or Sun?
This just reminds me of the Mummy's Alive cartoon, which I want to watch now.
You could turn it on, Nick. You probably wouldn't be missing a whole lot. Ajeel is very confident in the fact that he's awesome. And he's like, the sand is real nice. It tells me whatever I need to know, which I don't really know what that means. I don't know if that's like...
Assuming that he basically can monitor stuff via the sand?
There's no sand around. They're in a forest.
Well, there's dirt on the ground.
That's not sand. He doesn't get to control two things. You can have a dirt-themed power guy and a sand-themed power guy. You can't combine them. That's ridiculous. I mean, I know they did it in Avatar, but it'd be ridiculous here.
Actually, they did have a very specific form of earthbending that was sandbending.
Boom! There you go. Even Avatar couldn't do it. These two separate. Your
and
sand
regular,
is worthless.
Regular earthbenders would struggle to manipulate sand because it wasn't as solid.
Yeah, huh. Really
so, actually,
that.
By drawing that comparison, yeah, there you go. Bullshit, you can't be both! Fuck you, Ajir!
Fuck you, you dickhead. But now everyone's like, holy shit, he's on the same level as that woman. And
supposedly.
Yeah, the way they stressed it is that all 12 of these Super Magic Knights are on the same level, like they're all supposed to be at that power level, and they're all as strong as what was essentially the strongest, or at least the highest level mage in all of Ishgal. Now, remember, this is fairy tale, so inevitably there's like two or three groupers in this group who are like, how the fuck did this asshole make it into this elite group? This guy's a fucking idiot. His entire gimmick is bondage-themed bullshit. How is he? Like, what did he do to get in here? But still, this guy should be a big threat. And Makarov even screams like, no, don't try to fight him, he's too strong, I don't believe in you.
I mean, there was one time when we tried sparring, and I got really big, and I punched him really hard, and he got knocked down, looked like it was okay, but then sand came everywhere and defeated me immediately.
Yeah, he made a big fist out of sand that was even bigger than me, and it punched me out. It was very rude.
I mean, I thought maybe I can get even bigger, but, you know, surely, you know, he'll just get even more sand.
Yeah, he made more sand. Comes from the ground here in the forest, don't you know? That's how sand works.
And also, sand is very itchy and irritating, so I was just like, nope, done fighting.
Yeah, I'm dunsies with this. And
also,
yes,
it
I say dunsies.
All in my beard. It's all messy now. Never gets out, no matter how many times I wash my face.
Which is very rarely.
What were we talking about again? All right, run!
Right about that. Hulk Hogan, what a racist! they do go to retreat. Urza throws some knives at him that explode. For some reason.
I don't know what the fuck they're up with.
I don't know. She throws swords and they explode. And of course, it's Fairy Tail. I don't know if it's Crunchyroll that does it or if this is just how Fairy Tail is, but the only sound effect anything ever makes in this series is doom. So she throws a bunch of swords at them and they all go doom, 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 doom. And they're Ryan Array. Ajeel, we see him covered in these swords.
I want to point out, before we get to that point, there is a moment where Charles says, we've got a magic four wheeler over here. Just like, how?
Oh, yeah. I thought they said something to
the
regards
to that.
Like,
I've got equipped and ready over here. It's like, how?
I guess it's like fucking what? Dragon Ball Z. Like, they just have pills they throw down. And it's like, boom, magic cart, let's go.
It's just like, it's over here and waiting for us. It's like, how did...
And interesting though, I didn't notice that there's a scene of Urza plugging herself in. And she's like, SE plug set!
Yeah.
That has to be something.
It's like... kind of a kiddie tech show, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder if that's something that's been introduced before, and I'm just forgetting it because I don't remember a lot about Fairy Tail. But, I don't know. Anyways, Gio's like, that sucked. So, he chases after them. There's a big sand monster about to, like, hit them.
Yeah,
and...
just imagine, like, the mummy from that, the sand tornadoes that he would summon and shit.
And Gray and Lucy go up on top of it. Of course, there's like four or five shots of Lucy's butt because that's the only important thing of her in this scene.
Well, I mean, in fairness, Gray is also technically maintaining the same posture because they have to, you know, remain steady on the moving car. It's just that his butt does not somehow appear in front of the panel.
Yeah, it's when the perspective is on the scene, for some reason it's three always times. At an upward angle of fucking Lucy's butt, but it's just like, oh, great, a cool pose.
Yeah.
But whatever. And there's a sound effect that's not Doom for once, it's Fwash. But we see Lucy unveils one of her new forms, Sagittarius form, which actually would seem like a really cool uniform if it had pants.
Yeah.
It's got, like, the...
She's basically wearing, like, Noella Mimosa's thing.
Yeah, essentially. It's this weird, like, bottom, like, super cut, too, because you can even see the sides of her crotch. And I'm just like, why doesn't it have pants? This could be a cool uniform. Like, I know why it doesn't, because you're a hero. But if you gave it pants, this could be a cool outfit. And it's actually a kind of cool thing, too, because it's, like, her is, like, an archer, magic archer. She's, like, blasting these arrows out, knocking people out. Gray activates his demon form magic as well, or his super enhanced magic. I guess this is the demon slayer ice magic, when freezes basically the entire ice golem sand golem at once. Even the Geo has to be like, he's got skills! And then he throws a bunch of bats at them, and Lucy shoots them. A bunch of, like, action scenes. Can you even call it a panty shot when there's nothing covering it? Doesn't something have to be exposed for it to be a panty shot? But Geo uses his secret technique, Ant's Hill, or Hell, rather, and it basically creates one of those big sand pits that they fall into. Everyone goes tumbling. They all kind of get stuck in the sand. Of course, you know, most of the people are like, oh, this sand's so bad. But the only character who has to literally be, like, swathing about, like, help, is, of course, Lucy. Like, we couldn't give her whole chapter look kind of okay. We had to make her look a goober at some point. But Natsu gets up, and, of course, this is the moment where there's just an absolute black character in morality scale in Fairy Tail. There's no nuanced villains. Either you are a good guy who's become a bad guy, but don't worry, you'll be converted back to being a good guy again, or there's just this abject evil, because Geo's like, how many people has it killed? How many towns have I swallowed up? Oh, the Ant's Hell is a portal to end it all. No one's ever escaped it. Oh, God, let me go on about how many people I killed and how worthless you all are. Blah, 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 blah. You got stronger! And everyone in Fairy Tail is really, like, upset about how much cocky bullshit he's shooting out. So they all stand up, and the fake guild crest that they had embedded on them vanish for some reason. I don't know if someone gave a command to be like, I guess we don't need that anymore. Why they even bother?
Guys, hold your fists up.
They revealed this Fairy Tail a while back anyway. But all of their symbols revert back to Fairy Tail, and we get this scene of everyone standing there, like, look, my thing, you know, look at all of our symbols. And even Carla's got one.
I'm even like, Happy is like making his I'm a badass pose in the corner. Like, it's so weird.
You can leave the cats out of this, thank you very much. Although, would like to note, no Dornbolt, which is pretty amusing to me. The cats get to be badass. Dornbolt, not so much. And, Natsu just says some lines. He's like, okay, what if we've been abandoned by the gods? Because we've still got each other. I'm like, fuck yourself. And then he punches a Geo in the face.
Friendship, like, is the only god that matters.
I'm like, oh god. If you fucking clown this dude in one fight. And I know I shouldn't buy into it, but I'm just like, I'm of the mindset now where all the people who a couple weeks ago were like, nah, Chris, I think you're really overblowing. I think this might be the first time Fairy Tail's building up a really effective threat. And I'm just like, no, they didn't. I knew it wouldn't take long. I knew it wouldn't take a month for Natsu to clown one of these motherfuckers. He might not, though, because next week his chapter is titled The Fight to Flee. So maybe it's like he's too strong for us to beat, so it's just a fight to hold him off and get away and regain our bearings, and then, I don't know, unlock a second capsule of magic energy hidden with the missiles.
Just buy time holding off until Dornbolt can teleport them all away.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, to that regard, maybe not a bad chapter. There's just a lot of goofiness this chapter.
Yep, up and down. Let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, 128 Blindside. Did you ever see that movie?
No, I've heard of it, though. I just
it was all right. We get to see some of the weirder things going on at the Moon Festival. Namely, a play in which some of the students are dressed up like Power Rangers, and some are dressed up like monsters that Power Rangers battle, except they're food-themed. Okay, then.
Yeah.
uh, There's also stuff like Cookie Manga, which that might actually be a real one. Ajiro Hocho. Look that up. Chinese Food Club is still doing stuff, like pumping stuff out, and they're like, "Oh, how are you guys doing?" Some of the Polar Star students are like, "Oh, hey, someone, Megumin." And Tadakura is like, "Yeah, you know, thanks to the new noodles dish, we've been selling more, but that first day sucked so bad that we're still in the red. Thanks, Soma. You're gonna get me expelled again." And he's like, "What? All right. Profit. We need to do that." So Soma says, "Oh, hey, Megumi, you can go ahead and take a break." And they're like, "But what about all the customers?" And he's like, "Don't worry. One person's more than enough to handle the number of customers we're getting." Which, God, doing that whole thing where it's like, "I'm jolly for no reason." Kuga comes over to visit again and be all passive-aggressive and stuff. And he says, "I'm getting sick of seeing you're not selling anything but sitting across from my restaurant. To be blunt, you're an eyesore." And then he says, "So what say you do me a solid and close up shop, like, right now, this minute. Close her up. Shut her down. Oh, but I'll remember that you were here for the rest of my life. Promise. Now close up. Right now. Hurry. Come on. Shut down and get lost. Go on. Scram. Shoo. Shoo." All with this big, weird smile on his face. I do like that panel a lot. But then he's like, "Oh, wait, I've got customers to deal with." And so we get a flashback to when Soma was traveling around with the cart and Tadakoro, and Megumi was asking about his plan to do Mapo Tofu. And Soma said that Arina had told him that the dish that he had come up with was not spicy enough, but there is a reason. You can hear his Mapo Tofu wasn't that spicy. You see, the flavor my dad wanted for it was one that our regulars and anyone in the district who stopped by could enjoy. So yeah, Kuga's recipe has it beaten sheer spicy punch, but that doesn't mean he can cook better than my dad. And he looks all weird when he's saying that. But yeah, that's a good point. It was like, it doesn't have to match Kuga's dish in sheer spiciness. You can have a spicy dish be better than another in ways. Actually, it reminds me of something that one of my teachers did. Mm. My math teacher entered a chili cooking contest every year, and he said that he had two different chilies that he would always do. He would cook up two different batches. One was the spicy chili, and one was the good chili. So, you know.
So, but did he put in sandy peppers in it?
I can't
and then when recall. You eat it, you go on a crazy vision trip with Johnny Cash as a coyote?
No, he definitely didn't do that, because I actually got to have some of it. He brought some in for the class one time.
Oh.
He was a cool math teacher.
Oh, that's okay.
So someone's like, "I'm just not sure how well this is going to work out. There's an idea I wanted to try, though." And Megumi, I guess, explains all this to her friends. And so Megumi says specifically that he said, "As a restaurant, is the Chinese Food Society's booth really 100% perfect from top to bottom?" And they're like, "But it's making such a huge profit." So Soma basically, I guess, starts experimenting with this dish. Eventually Megumi shows up. And Soma's thinking to himself, "Okay, we gotta do this, blah, blah, blah." And both Soma and Megumi start calling in favors, which is interesting. Soma calls up Mr. Tomita, and Megumi seemingly calls up one of the chefs that she worked with during stagiaire week. They finish up their work, and they're like, "Oh, this might just work," and so on and so forth. And it turns out that the thing that Soma called Tomita about was getting benches laid out in front of the cart. And so Kuga's like, "Oh, this seems really cheap. You know, you spend all week figuring all this out, and this is all you got. Set up seats and they'll come. That seems really simple-minded, especially since you can't beat me for taste." Soma replies, "True, this is my first moon festival. It's only been half a year since I transferred into the Institute, so it's all new to me. But when it comes to running a real restaurant for real customers, then I'm the senpai about 10 years.
Oh, snizzap.
Kuga looks so pissed off in that cut panel, too. Like,
that should be, right? I mean,
that's an ice burn. That is awesome.
Well, that's also, like, a huge thing, too. Like, in Japan, to be considered a junior to one of your actual, like, younger, co-eds. To be considered, I was about to say co-eds.
Senpai and co-ed, basically.
Yeah, to be considered a junior to them is a pretty big offense, to my understanding.
Yeah, this would be considered incredibly rude in Japan, actually, to basically say to someone who deserves your respect, supposedly, according to the hierarchy, no, I'm the senpai.
To be like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, and he's saying it all with this big confident grin on his face, and immediately Kuga's, you know, kind of friendly, you know, pushiness is gone, just, like, glaring at him. It's, like, the most... It's weird that this is, like, the angriest I think someone has appeared in this series, even though his expression isn't all that, you know, furious.
Yeah.
It's just the art style shifts so much. So Soma starts making his Mapo Tofu, and everyone's like, what is he doing? You know, because, you know, Kuga's a Sichuan master, and he's gonna go head on, I guess, with the Satan dish, and then Megumi says, oh, the noodles are done, Soma, and so they're like, wait, they're gonna make noodles with Mapo Tofu. He's mixing up all these things. What are you doing? Well, and then, after adding in the noodles, he adds in a giant meatball in the Mapo Tofu. And everyone's like, what the hell is he doing? And Soma just says, I told you, remember? I'm going to beat you with my cooking.
Dun 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 dun.
By the way, that dish does look fucking amazing.
I'm not as interested in this as I was that meat bun, Nick. There's something about the meat bun. The pork bun. Oh.
I'm not a big fan of tofu, so... But it's just like, oh, that looks good, doesn't it?
Well, I'm having trouble telling what everything in there is. It looks like...
Yeah, it's because he hasn't broken it down yet.
Yeah. But the meat bun, the pork bun, Nick. Oh.
Oh.
I can't tell just you. Now I want one.
It's like a calzone. I love calzones.
Oh, now I made myself hungry for one. God damn it. And now I made myself hungry for Cuban sandwiches, but I remember last conversation. Fuck me.
I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before, but we were talking about Greek food, and then we brought up Baconairs, and I was like, what a Baconair. I went and got Baconair after that.
Oh, did you? Yeah. How was it?
It was not very good, honestly.
Oh.
It was a fairly late night Baconair where they didn't give a shit about
it. Oh, they were just like, yeah, here you go, cheese.
Here's your fucking... cooked an hour ago bacon that we've just been keeping hot with heat lamps, you know.
Well, to be fair, Wendy's bacon's not the best anyway. I mean, they've upped their game, but being a bacon connoisseur, I can tell you, Nick, they've not done great work in keeping their bacon up to date. It's definitely middle tier as far as fast food bacon goes, which, as a former fat man, I know far too much about.
Quite like this chapter. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes and seeing if Soma emerges victorious now, because it seems like we're getting very close to the climax of this little mini arc.
Yes.
We've got no One Piece this week.
Which was a pretty big disappointment to me.
Yeah.
I was pretty sad about that.
I guess we're just going straight to Toriko?
No, My Hero Academia, Nick.
Oh, God. I always skip over that one. I'm still somehow not used to it being...
You're like, it's like a jump start, right? Like, it's not even in the magazine?
I'm just somehow not used to it being in the run, and My Hero Academia was way better than Toriko was, so there we go. Yeah, as we mentioned previously, they're holding the vote, and there's this kind of cool color spread where all the characters are in, like, dress attire and celebrating and stuff. It's interesting to see a lot of the characters in color, especially the ones we don't even see very often normally.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty sweet. We also get another kind of color page announcing that the volume 1 is going to be going into print soon.
Action, adventure, education.
Yeah, I don't know why education's in there. It's not very
school.
I know it's school, but I haven't. It's not.
They're
like,
learning about kicking ass. Yeah,
I'd say like action, adventure, more action, or something. Adolescence. Oh, I keep the A's up there. But I actually am going to shoot, because I guess this must be digital then, so my next paycheck, I want to shoot a copy of this over to Nash. I want to see if he'll check it out, because he complains so much.
Yeah,
he complains so much about how the state of comic books are nowadays. It's like, dude, you got to get into manga. So I want to see if I send it to him, if he reads it, try to get him on the show. It's my plan.
That'd be
lure him in.
You just to be like, what is this setup you guys are working with? This is not how you run a podcast.
He's like, this is fucking garbage. I'm like, save us, sir.
Just tears apart both of our audio setups.
He runs over just punches.
Because as we know, Nash is the biggest asshole that we have ever met, you know?
Yeah, I mean, people call him Nash. I call him Ass. Oh. Which is short for asshole. Boom. Nailed him. Super bird. He's so nice to retweet us every so often, too.
The first time I ever met Nash, he actually gave me a ride to the airport so I could make it back home. So
I thought you were really about to rate me, like the first time I ever met
Nash.
He didn't know who I was. He gave me a hug, and I was just going to be like, "Oh, that's amazing."
I'm serious. Like, he's a cool dude. Yeah.
Who'd you vote for, Nick?
I haven't voted for anyone yet.
Who are you going to vote for?
Bakugo.
I voted for Bakugo as well. Like, I didn't. I was really tempted. I was like, I kind of want to vote for Todoroki because he's pretty sweet.
He's cool. Deku's cool. Todoroki's cool.
I was like,
he's got Bakugo, though.
I was like, Bakugo makes me laugh. Like, every time he fucking does
something. I love how everyone is like, yeah, we made it 1 year. And Bakugo was like holding his hand up, like, I will be the best!
It was pretty fucking awesome. I gotta admit. So.
What's the angry at in that picture?
Life in general, I guess. He seems pretty unhappy
Maybe
with
he's
things.
He's like not actually angry. He's just like belting out like a soprano.
Yeah, he's just like...
Oh! Anyway. My Hero Academia. Number 52. Hero Killer Stain versus UA Students. Deku basically has a very short flashback to trying to find the Hero Killer because he thinks that maybe Ida is trying to track him down, and so he specifically is going into the alleys because he read that that seemed to be where he lurked around, and then we kind of just catch up immediately after that to when he managed to sock Stain across the face, and he shows up and he's like, bingo! Because Deku's a dork. So then he's like, oh no, I knew that 60% of the Hero Killer's victims were discovered around blind corners. So I've been scouring back alleys near the normal Hero Agency, and I've been looking for you. And he says to Ida, he's like, oh, come on, can you move? And, you know, make for the main road so you can get some pros to help us. But Ida says, no, I can't move. He cut me, so that must be his quirk. You know, if he cuts people, they basically become powerless and helpless. Ida... Actually, Deku notices, oh man, you know, there's another hero here. If it was just Ida, I might have been able to carry him and run. So, showing the difference between Deku and Ida, you know.
Yeah, he's like, I'm here, I'm focused on saving him, I'm a good person.
And so Ida is like, you know, Midoriya, don't interfere, this is nothing to do with you. And Stain starts talking down him, you know, a friend shows up to save you, but it's my duty to kill these two. If we are forced to fight, then naturally the weaker of us will be culled. So, what now?
Well, Nick, what now?
Well, Deku thinks to himself, he remembers what All Might told him. Idealistic criminals have a different sort of fire in their eyes. And Deku just thinks, this guy is not like the guys who attacked us at the academy. These are the eyes of
these
a killer.
These are crazy people.
Even with just a hunch and no proof, I should have persuaded some pros to come with. Now I need to protect those two that are down. Maybe buy some time, or if possible, drive off the Hero Killer all by myself. And Ida's still like, run, this is none of your business. And Deku says, what's a hero supposed to do when you say crap like that? I've got a lot to say to you, but that'll come later. Because it's like All Might said, giving help that's not asked for is what makes a true hero. And this one page is so cool to me because Deku is kind of forcing this grin. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I'm confident that I'm gonna beat you. I'm gonna fight you. And Stain is so happy that he's met like an actual idealistic hero. He just gets this big sick grin on his face, and Ida's down the ground still looking frustrated, and then Deku rushes in to keep fighting. I just like the page. It just like kind of just like sums up, here's what happened in this chapter all in one go.
Yeah. That's very cool, and I do like how, you know, we get this cool speech out, but you can see Deku is terrified. You know, it's just true to that character. Even in the moment where, you know, you're like, oh, this is his big moment to be a badass, you're like, yeah, he's still fucking terrified, though.
So Deku rushes in, he ducks down, activates his full cloak ability, and dives between Stain's legs to get behind him. Then Stain slashes behind him, but Deku's already jumped into the air, and while he's over his head, he strikes him with a Detroit Smash and just kind of gets a grazing blow along the top or back of his head. And Deku's like, oh my god, yo, it worked! My full cloak worked! I can really fight! And immediately Stain just licks the blade of his dagger, and Deku suddenly collapses to his knees. And he's like, what? No! Did he manage to scratch me somehow? No, that's not it! It's blood! And Stain says, you lack power, but you did track my movements, you exploited my blind spot, and you planned to bring me down. That's how you moved. So many fools out there are nothing but talk, but you are worth keeping alive, unlike these others. And he immediately goes right back over to Ida and holds his sword over his eye, and he goes like, no, don't do it! And immediately a wave of flame comes rushing in, and Stain is forced to leap away. And everyone looks over and says, like, ah, so many interruptions. But Todoroki is there, and he's like, Midoriya, learn to write more specific directions. I was almost too late.
He's here, Nick!
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of cool things to this. I mean, this is a very good chapter in general. Probably my favorite of the week. Just in terms of, like, being, like, a really cool chapter. The action in it is awesome. It's not very long, but it's drawn just so spectacularly. Like, there's such a sense of speed and movement to it that normally is very hard to convey in this medium. But in this chapter, I really got the sensation of like, oh, Midoriya, you know, Midoriya's fucking Deku. That's what I call him. Deku's really moving around. He's docking underneath this guy. I like how they made a big deal out of this Detroit Smash, but it's specifically noted this is a 5% power Detroit Smash. Like, yeah. And you're like, that's so cool. Like, you made this seem so awesome, and you have so much more of it to exploit and utilize in the future. Like, that's just great fucking, like, world building as it is. Just, like, keeping your scale in check and making every moment seem big. But I also like that when Todoroki shows up, it's not completely ridiculous. You actually see a scene at the beginning of this when he's kind of contemplating how things are going to be. You see him texting behind his back. Yeah. And that's presumably him, you know, gaining contact with Todoroki. And it's...
Please help.
it's cool seeing him show up. And Todoroki shows up and he uses ice and fire. So clearly he's okay with using fire when it's something he's okay with. I mean, this is a very cool change to see from him. And I really want to see where this is going to go. It's just a really great chapter all the way around.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Now I'm sitting there, I'm like, should I have given Todoroki my fucking...
Maybe I should have given Stain it. I mean, he's kind of awesome, too.
I've heard a lot of people giving it to Stain. I've actually heard that's a thing.
All right, let's move on to Toriko.
Now it's Toriko. Nick, you're going to have to explain Toriko to me. I read it twice.
There's preparation for the competition between the chefs. I don't give a shit. Then they're like, oh...
Hold on, wait. You care about what's in the middle?
Ladies and gentlemen, are your bowls of rice ready? And it was like, oh, stuff. And then it's like, Komatsu is talking to homeless guy, and he's like, oh, souls are sold, what does that mean? And the guy's like, our ancestors were originally slaves to the Nitro, along with apparently everyone they're encountering in the New World. I mean, shit, they had lots of slaves, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, people sell their souls and stuff. What happens is, if there is any sort of fault with you, like bad eyes, which Chaco's mother had, then if they find out about it, then they will, like, take you and sell your soul and stick some new soul in it as well. And Komatsu's like, oh no, so what happened to Chaco? Is he going to have his soul replaced? Well, none of his body has no particular abnormalities to it, but that's not the case, because he has a poor sense of taste and smell. And Komatsu's like, oh, that's why he didn't like my cooking.
Wasn't that fucking... Isn't, like, Blue Grill supposed to be, like, twice the size of the United States or something like that? Like, isn't it supposed to be huge?
It's fucking huge, yes.
Yeah, like, a fucking one dude, like, this is, like, one organization going around being like, what you got, flat feet? Fuck it, you're coming with me and we're taking your soul. Seems so much work.
Yeah, God. And so, Komatsu was like, can I borrow you? Is this the soup? This is the soup I cooked yesterday. The guy's like, oh! And I'm like, does it taste all right? Chaco may just have a taste disorder. Yeah, that's what he fucking told you.
He just told you that happened.
He told you that. You gotta be like, oh, he has a bad sense of taste, and that's why he didn't like my food. I have to make sure my ego is intact by having this other guy enjoy it.
Go save him already!
Hold on, I need to think more about this.
I have to make sure that I'm not the problem here.
Yeah, I'm awesome. He's the freak.
I have to make sure that when Gordon Ramsay comes to my kitchen and says my food is crap, I can say, but all my other customers like it.
Yeah. Hold on. Hold on, Chaco. I'll save you later.
If you'll excuse me, I have to prepare for Mr. Ramsay to appear at my restaurant.
Yeah. I have a hot date coming up with Mr. Ramsay?
Well, yes. Yeah.
That's not a sexual date. I mean, it might be, though. It depends on how much he likes my restaurant. And if he does, so be it.
Oh, this food is so great. I have to put my dick in something right now.
Yeah, it's the smallest, youngest-looking boy's butthole possible to be.
But I'm 29! Oh, whatever.
Well, you look like you're 17, and that's still okay with me. There's no recorders around here, are there? We didn't film this for a show I'm doing, one of my 12 shows.
Unlike Hulk Hogan, we are actually kidding about Gordon Ramsay, because as far as we know, he is not having
Actually, from all I've heard, Gordon Ramsay is a spectacular, upstanding person.
Yes, I just wanted to say that, because in the same episode, we were like, oh, fuck Hulk Hogan. I feel like every single person that we're insulting in this podcast, other than the person that we actually mean to be insulting, have to be immediately be like, no, I actually...
Yeah, like we have to come in and be like, guys, just real quick, Gordon Ramsay does not have sex with minors. I don't...
As far as we know,
yeah,
pretty sure he doesn't.
I'm like 80% positive on that.
I'm in the 99th percentile on that one.
Yeah.
Also, they're going to have the cooking contest, and people who have shouted to fight them have masks on because souls were sold and chefs from... And they're like, oh, we are chefs from 10 star restaurants, and there's a weird featureless black figure. It's like, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. And whatever.
Like, and they reveal, like, oh, here's the five chefs that are coming, and it's like Millimeter Dude, Oil Cooking Guy, No-No... I feel like I know the eye patch, like, fucking dude, but I don't know his ability. And I think it's one of the gourmet hermit people is the other one.
And like, I don't care about any of them.
There's a slight bit of a care about No-No, because she's supposed to be Komatsu's kind of love interest. Yeah, like, that's in there. And also, I guess I kind of have a small affection for the oil guy, because I'm like, you know, there's like one black character per series in this. It'd be kind of cool if he gets a little spotlight. But it's still just a case of like, I don't really give that much of a fuck about these five. If they all get fucking spotlight, and then you fucking off-screen handle what Brunch and Zebra are doing, I'd be furious. Because I can tell you, I do not give nearly 1/18th of a shit about what these guys are doing in comparison to what those two fucking awesome dudes are doing off. And I don't even remember where they're at. Probably some, like, fucking Rocket Jamboree Jungle of some kind.
Rocket Jamboree Jungle.
Oh, I was about to say Poison Jungle, but I was like, no, that's going to be that's Coco's thing. The one poison environment is where they had to go. But to this regard, seeing these five... And there's very little interest.
Let's move on to World Trigger now, please, because stuff that I care about actually happened in this one. So, last time, Izumi basically told Osamu, okay, I'll teach you how to do combination shooting stuff if you can beat my teammate Yuiga 100 times. And so, I'm not sure exactly what's going on the first page. I think that Yuiga is supposed to be, like, clinging on to something while...
Yeah, because you see...
Izumi's trying to pull him away.
Yeah, you can see he's, like, screaming because he's, like, holding onto a chair, like, ah, no, he's just going to kill me over and over again because he's...
like, oh, solo battles aren't my forte. I request a fair team battle, which is fucking hilarious.
A fair team battle. Your number one A-rank team against a fucking B-rank team.
That's great. And then I'll show some of what I'm made of. So, like, come on, get the fuck ready. He's like, no, you're just saying I have to lose 100 times against him. I know how you do things, Izumi. You're going to break my pride.
A young man full of promise is being violated. And I'm like, ooh, that's interesting.
Someone called the human rights group. And then immediately the next page, ha 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 ha, too bad, Mikumo. I guess I made a display of my A-rank prowess. Perhaps I was being a tad child.
He's such a fuck.
I fucking love this dude.
It took him 2 minutes to be like, I'm the best. I'm the best. I'm the best. I'm the best. You suck. I'm the best. after like a page of begging, like just short of being like, "I'll blow you, Izumi."
I'm not gonna do this. It. Like, can you imagine? Like, he just like decides just go limp. Yeah, you don't have to carry me there.
Like, they're literally dragging him fucking to the fight.
His fingernails ding into the floor.
And he whoops Osamu through matches straight. He's like, oh, "Wait, I'm awesome."
He like goose steps out of the arena. I am so great. I am so great. Solo parade for me. Do 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 do.
Oh, God.
We then get our chapter title, chapter 110, Haruaki Azuma, although we do see that while Yuiga did whoop Mikumo's ass, Mikumo did manage to beat him twice, which means that he did manage to fare significantly better against Yuiga as against Kazama, whom he only managed to tie once. Izumi approaches Osamu. He's like, so even after Urashiyama taught you some tricks, it seems like it's still kind of be hard to actually hit the guy, isn't it? But that's your first two wins, so 98 more to go. Anyway, want to call it for today? And Osamu's like, no, I gotta do as much as I can. And he thinks to himself, it's just like Karasuma and Urashiyama said, I try too hard to get a hit and get stiff. I don't feel as much pressure from Yuiga as I felt from the other B-rank agents, means he kind of sucks, so I should be able to win more if I can just move better. But why is he on the A rank number one, Scott? And Yuga's like, oh, challenge me all you want, I'll let you practice on.
I'm awesome. Da-da-da-da.
So the day comes to a close. Osamu and Yuma are having dinner with Karasuma, and apparently Osamu has asked Karasuma why exactly Yuiga is on the number one A rank team. And Karasuma says, it's because he's the son of Border Sponsor. Poor Yuiga, he sucks so much. He's only there because of nepotism. He explains, yeah, there are people who provide funds to Border, and Yuiga's dad's company is the biggest sponsor for Border, and Yuiga knew that, so when he enlisted, he insisted that he be placed on an A-rank squad. But because they tossed him into Tachikawa's squad, it didn't end up quite like he imagined, and there's just an image of him being abused by his teammates.
I think we saw this space in this exact scene like last week.
Yeah, it's Izumi like chopping him in the back of the head, and they're like, "Oh, why are you doing this?" And Tachiko is like,
ha, ha, ha. "I'm eating chips.
I'm such a great captain." So he was like, "Well, I guess that's one way to become A rank." So the next day comes around, and
Chika's birthday.
Shiori is her name, isn't it? Is that her name? The coordinator.
You could pay me $1 million, Nick. I could not name you a Blast single operator.
Coordinator of Tamakoma. I think it's Shiori. I think it might be it. No, that's Izumi's name. Oh, I feel bad now.
Oh. Well, we'll give it a moment. Annalise will come.
No. That is. I think that's her name. Shiori.
Yeah, it's Shiori. You're good. Right. You
know, I was Nick. Right. Why was I so doubtful? Fuck me. Anyway, so she's like, oh, Chika, it's your birthday. And I was planned that stuff you had told us earlier, and Chica's like, no, it's okay.
No, don't worry about it, Sasori. Nobody would celebrate it anyway.
My name is Shiori.
I don't remember your name either.
I'm Eeyore, except that I make a V-mouth expression.
Yeah, I just have one facial expression.
And Yuma's like, Chica, I used to have one facial expression too, but I evolved beyond that. What's wrong?
And oh, you have to be happy to have a smile.
So, off-panel, Chica explains, yeah, I accidentally said that I can't shoot people. It just kind of slipped out. And so I was like, well, you done fucked up, but it's okay. He says, well, eventually people would have figured it out just by watching our matches. But you still shouldn't have told him. So, yeah. Yuma also is like, well, if Hatahara was similar to you, then Ninomiya might have realized your weakness already. So that's okay. As well as Azuma, Hatahara's mentor, who is another one of their opponents. So I think that's like one of the few bits of focus we've gotten on their squad so far, really.
We have seen Azuma's squad before, to be
fair. We saw them in their meeting, and we saw them, I guess, during the invasion and stuff like that, but we're actually learning a little bit of detail here about them.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Osamu is like, okay, this means we're going to have to take extra precautions to make sure that she stays hidden, because now they're going to be gunning for her if they think that there's no way that she's going to take them out. And Yuma also is like, oh, but you know, what if they think you can't shoot, but then you will? Wouldn't that be interesting? Duck face! Chica's like, yeah, V face.
Oh, bother. Like, that's Pooh's line.
But I pull it off way better.
I can't even... You're becoming fucking the Mandarin from Iron Man 3. Yeah, they'll never see me coming.
I'm actually distracted. People hated this twist, but I thought it was kind of funny. Anyway, yeah. So planning goes on, and Osamu basically tells his teammates, you know, it's like, okay, you know, each squad's favorite strategy is fixed to some extent, so, you know, we don't know what map Azuma squad's going to take, but we should go over the logs to see if we can come up with countermeasures against their, you know, preferred strategies. And also, review our basic teamwork and just fucking practice more. Very straightforward. Then we go to Azuma squad strategy room. Where Haruaki Azuma is basically going over things with his two...
They're there.
His two attackers, and they're like, we have inverted hair.
Yeah.
Like, one is an exact inversion of the other. I have black hair with a spike in the back. I have white hair with a spike in the front. And they're like, we'll work together, and blah, 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 and take stuff out, and so on, or whatever. And Azuma's just like, okay, well, we'll try to win with our strengths, so your plan sucked, guys.
he's like a very cautious big brother. He's like, okay, well, I see where your opinions differ. Why don't you tell me where you agree on?
That sucks. That is the exact opposite of how we usually run, so shut the fuck up and never suggest anything ever again. We're going to do it the way we usually do. Their operator is like, you know, and Azuma's not going to have a line of fire if we go with our usual strategy. And one of them's like, oh, but, you know, that's where you come in, Mako. It's like, ah, fuck you. Then they're like, okay, what do we do with Kagura's squad? What do we do with Tamakoma's little one? Because, you know, terrain doesn't matter with those guys. Now, what sort of platform should we have? And then Azuma says something very interesting. Okay, after basically, he's like, you know, there's these guys to watch out for, and Okudera, one of his attackers, is like, we'll leave them to you, Azudera. And the operator is like, this plan has some holes in it. Because it's like, yeah, we don't know. You handle them, Cap. Yeah, whatever. But then Azuma says something that I find very interesting, which is, go ahead, give me any job to do. I'm a pawn, after all. But in this pawn's opinion, I'd prefer a simpler map. So it's weird that he's the leader, but he's the pawn.
Yeah, he seems to have a very humble opinion of himself. Although this instantly reminds me of the conversation in The Wire where they're comparing like drug deals to chess matches, and they curiously just gloss over what the fucking the knight's supposed to represent, because there's no good allegory, like a fucking allegory to what a fucking L-shaped moving pattern's supposed to be in the drug game. Just like, oh yeah, the rook's like the stash. It can move anywhere it wants because it has to go all over the place. What's the horse? Batink! What horse piece? Like, it just flicks it off the board.
I've got to fucking watch The Wire. God damn it. Anyway, so, basically this is more to establish, I guess, the relationship among the team members, because Koarai and Okudera have this very, you know, pupils of the master thing going on with Azuma, but he clearly looks after them and stuff, and he's like, you know, don't forget, when you fight with strategy, they're like, take into account the enemy's strategic prowess, which is a stupid fucking line to have to memorize for a response to something. It's like, that's not even catchy. Anyway.
It's so like, yeah, what's our catchphrase? When you fight with strategy, take into account the enemy's strategic prowess. Can't be like, you know, remember they have plans too? No, it's not verbose enough. Isn't the point of a catchphrase to be quick and memorable? I thought it was to be long and obtuse.
Even Sun Tzu's thing is like way more catchy than that. You could just be like, you know yourself, know your enemy, then you will never lose. And that's it, you know. That seems like an actual motto.
He's like, wait, well, can't we use strategy twice in the same sentence, though? Fuck it, I'm doing it anyway.
Strategy, strategic prowess. Anyway, then we cut over to Kagura's squad's room, and Kagura is actually watching a log of when Yuma managed to beat Murakami. And they're like, oh, wow. He's watching a log. Yeah, maybe that's a sign that it's gonna snow, which is actually foreshadowing. So he's like, oh man, you're actually motivated, Kage. He's like, shut up! I was watching Arafune and Co. lose.
I'm pretty ecstatic, Nick, about this new character, because if I ever get fat again, if I ever decide to just balloon up again, I now have another character I can add to my cosplay options outside of Arabia Fats from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I can be a fat dude from Kagura Squad.
Just wear a heavy jacket and a t-shirt. And
then yeah, bam. I'm like, boom, I'm the least important member of Kagura Squad.
And then we get a training montage, and we also see, like, the calendar with days passing by and stuff until it...
Nick, all right, which Rocky song do we do in the back of this? I'm partial to Hearts
on Fire.
You
did Hearts of Fire before, didn't you?
All right, so, like, in the back, it's just like, bump, 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 shoo, shoo, bump, 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 calendar flipping, bump, 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 shotgun.
Anyway, so... Then eventually, it gets to the point where Yuga's like, Mikuma, winning one of her battles against me seems to have been too high of a hurdle. And it shows that they have had 20 10 round matches against each other, and Yuga has won 152 to 48. Although, you can kind of tell that means that Mikuma did start to get better because he was losing by, 4 to 1, as opposed to now losing by about 3 to 1. So. So Izumi is like, should I make your goal to instead win 50 matches so then you can finish up? But Osamu says, no, I understand now that I won't be able to master them even if you teach me the composite shots now. Although he takes away from this, by fighting against someone who's not too strong, I'm starting to learn how to get more hits, so I should be able to help the team more than before. So this did pay off.
Yeah, presumably. Or they'll get into this match, Osamu gets clowned, and we're like, I guess he really does need to get better against the worst guy in A rank before he can actually compete here.
Like, oh my god, Osamu, you managed to hit someone. That's
like,
the victory.
Thanks. You didn't kill them. In fact, they turned around and just crushed your monkey ass, but that was still pretty sweet. Thanks, guys.
Then we cut to the arena. It's time now for the match. B rank wars round 4. And Ayatsuji is there on commentary, and she's like, yo, I'm here with a play-by-play, and in the booth with me are Kazama Squad's Captain Kazama and Kako Squad's Captain Kako. Have we met this character before?
I believe she's supposed to be part of the all-female squad at the top of the rankings, isn't she? She's an A-rank squad. They show up at the very end of the invasion arc to be like, oh, we're on the way. I think. I'm not 100% certain, but I believe so.
I actually like this one little detail that happens at the beginning, where... they make note of the fact that the match is actually taking place on Valentine's Day. So Ayatsuji, welcomes her guests by saying, like, oh, yeah, I got you guys both Valentine's chocolates. Or rather, it's actually a day later than Valentine's Day. So he's like, oh, it's late, but, here you go, Kazama. And I also got you. Oh, that's Kako doing this. Kako's like, oh, here.
Yeah, Kako gets it for them. And
yeah, here, some Valentine's chocolates. And also, Ayatsuji got you some, too. And Ayatsuji's just like, yay!
That's like, Kazama's just clearly, like, he takes them because you see him eating it. Next panel, like, nom, nom. But he's like, doesn't say anything. He doesn't say thank you. He doesn't, like, do any, like, he doesn't even, like, look, like, turn to acknowledge her. He's just like, sweet food.
It's kind of a weird thing. That's just the thing in Japan. Like, you just get chocolate for people, and then, like, a month later, the boys have to do it, so.
It's craziness, Nick.
Yeah. And there's this whole thing, like, I think that they actually did that in Nisekoi one time, where they were like, oh, there's different kinds of chocolate. You can get the store-bought chocolate, or you can, make it yourself, and if it's homemade, that means it's way more important,
Did you ever homemade chocolate, Nick? I mean, I know you hate chocolate.
No, I had no reason to. I'd be like, no, fuck
cultural, it. All right, Nick, suddenly we're Japan. You and me, we teleport in there. We have Japanese accents, and I'm like, oh, Nicholas, what are you getting me for the Valentine's Day?
And I'm like, you're not actually speaking Japanese, you're just speaking with a racist accent. What the fuck, man?
No, this is not my racist accent. This is my racist accent.
Okay,
you remember, right?
Go ahead, go back.
Okay, Nick, what are we having? Are you getting me Valentine's Day chocolates?
I'm like, no, because it's not March yet.
But I want them now.
I'm sorry.
I'm very hungry.
They actually do play around with that sometimes.
I forgot my lunch today.
I think that sometimes some people actually play around with that. It's, if it's like, guys getting it for their own crush or something like that, I guess for those who consider themselves more effeminate. I don't know. I think it has more... It definitely, I think, has... If I believe I'm correct on this, has more to do with the giver than the receiver.
It is supposed to be very important, like, who gives it to people, and then there's White Day, which is, like, a month afterwards, where basically if you... I don't know if it's supposed to be if you have... feelings you return it, or if it's just in general you're supposed to. I mean, I know it has
there are two types. There is one that is specifically called, like, obligatory chocolate, which is, like, you just get chocolate for, like, people who are important in your life, your friends, your family, co-workers, and stuff like that. But then there is the homemade chocolate, which could be for, you know, someone you really care about. It can be used as a love confession and stuff like that. And then guys who have received chocolate are supposed to return the favor, as well as, you know, giving it to people that they want to give it to. So that's the tradition anyway. I'm sure not everyone follows it exactly. Anyway, so I just like the little detail where it's like, oh, there's chocolate and stuff. And there's a weird thing, because it seems almost as though Kakko is, like, looking at Kazuma while he's eating it.
So yeah, that's the thing. She's, like, she's very happy with it, and he just doesn't give a fuck. He's like, whatever.
Is this meant to be like, oh, she likes Kazuma, or is it just like, oh, you know, I just wanted to get chocolate for people, you know?
It's wouldn't like, you it's like Kazuma, Nick?
It's like, it's insight into her character, but we don't know what it means yet.
There's layers, Nick. Layers upon layers. Who knows where this is going to lead?
So they basically say, yes, there's going to be Cityscape B here, and there's like, oh, you know, got a bunch of different sized buildings and so on and so forth. In some places it's very hard to get a line of fire. Azuma Squad was the one who picked the map. They mentioned Nasu in round 3 boldly used the weather setting to split up the opposing squads. But Kakko says, you know, I'll bet Azuma won't gamble like that. Kazuma says, yeah,
watch me.
So everyone goes into the virtual stage. We get this big 2-page spread. We get a little panel dedicated to all the different combatants as they're reacting to the scene. Of course, Azuma Squad knows exactly what's going on. Ninomiya Squad, some of them looked a bit perturbed. Kagura Squad all look kind of freaked out. And Tamakoma Squad also look very surprised by what's happened. As we see that they have chosen to have pretty heavy snow for the weather.
It's not heavy like snow heavy, and it's not, cityscape.
Yeah, it's not exactly like heavy snowfall, because it's not like a blizzard or anything like that, but there's snow coating all of the surfaces and stuff like that.
Which makes it very hard for snipers to stay hidden, because there's going to be tracks.
And very specifically, Azuma Squad are all wearing bagworms.
Yes. In addition, Nick, Nenomiya Squad are all in very dapper-looking suits.
They are the fucking Men in Black.
They're fucking... Not the Men in Black, I don't think. I feel like they are fucking, like, the host club guys. Like, they're just like... Like, we show up and, like, we just fucking look sexy as fuck in our suits, and you can't do shit about it because we're just that good. Like, we're rich, presumably. We're talented. We're all good-looking. Look at our squad. All of us. Fucking studs. Look at the other... Look at the other squad. It's a pig, a kid, some, like, shark dude. I mean, the rest of you, there's, like, one squad of, like, 2 idiots and a fucking long-haired old dude. We're the hot guys.
So they're the cast of the Ouran Host Club, if they were heels.
Yes. Oh, Nick. I mean, you can't see full body from yet, but I really hope, like, they're in, like, just full, like, outright suits. Like, fucking, like, pressed. Because they don't give a fuck. They're like, we know we're better than you.
Every third movement they make is to adjust their ties.
Yeah, like, it's just like, one hand is on their trigger, the other hand is on their tie to readjust it when it shifts slightly. Yeah. They don't need that second trigger, Nick. Because they're that good.
They don't need that second sword.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's gonna do it. I like the setup for World Trigger, but it's, you know, just more like, okay, time for the fight now. I do like seeing a little bit of progress made by Osamu. I am enjoying the slow burn. Best chapter this week, though, My Hero Academia by a fucking mile. So
I like this chapter a lot, though. I will give credit to World Trigger. This is an exciting chapter for me. I'm excited to see where this is all going to go.
World Trigger and Food Wars and My Hero Academia. There's so much I'm fucking looking forward to next week and the return.
Get One Piece back.
And I'm not sure if I'll be able to do Weekly Manga Recap next week. We'll see. We'll find out, I guess.
Like, find out if that fucking crazy-ass character in Bleach is as wacky as I hope he's going to be.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, that's going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap for now. So thank you, everyone, who tuned in. You can check out all of our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. I got it backwards. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Also, we record the show live on twitch.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, usually, although sometimes stuff happens and we have to reschedule. So to stay updated on that stuff, just follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT. I'm at White Ruler of Time. We will tell you where and when we are going to be recording stuff. Also, be sure to send criticism, questions, and suggestions to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Currently, we're working on the suggestion of Shaman King, but eventually, we are going to finish that up and talk about it. We're going to need something else to talk about. So, hey, maybe your suggestion will be picked for next time.
And more importantly, guys, well, not more importantly, but, you know, more importantly in terms of stressing it, send in your questions, because we're now going to be doing monthly Q&A episodes. I guess we'll have to figure out what day we want to do that. We will be recording that live again, so make sure you get your questions in. We have a backlog to work through, but I imagine we'll be catching up on that relatively quickly, so send in any questions you want to put. We'll answer them.
Also, you can find our stuff on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe and leave a rating and comment and all that type of stuff, because we appreciate all the feedback. Was there any special thing?
iTunes, yes. We had several reviews, actually. We have one here from Ginger Straw Hat. He says, the main reason I got back into podcasts and manga, always entertaining, usually a little crude, and at times filled with disturbing fan fiction, WMR is a great listen to week after week. We also got one from Aerozoid. He says, it's the best, by far, the best woodworking podcast I've ever listened to. And one here from Lou Ranma Yasha, who says, hands down, the best manga podcast around. There are many great manga podcasts out on the web, but as good as many are, fewer are as close to being as gut-bustingly hilarious and engrossing as Weekly Manga Recap is.
Okay. Do we want to thank our patrons at this point?
I'm going to do that next week. As I said, next week. I feel like, or whatever the next time we do an episode is, just because we're going to get a lot of influx of them now, so I'm going to save it for when we basically just do it all at once, and then it'll be more tapered off from there.
Okay.
But I also, because I noted today, if you do donate your dollar, at least a dollar, and then you want to have your shout-out on the show, if you don't, I'm basing off of what your Patreon name is when you subscribe, but if you want your online handle to be put in there, or you know, you want a nickname, or whatever it is, just leave a comment on the Patreon or shoot us over an email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, and we'll change it up before we announce it.
Yes. Also, special thanks must go out to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work at narokfanboy.deviantart.com, idropboobs.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann. Special thanks as well to Felix Stark and the Infamous Planet for making those visual editions of our podcast. They're awesome. Go see them on YouTube.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess that is going to do it.
I think so. It feels weird to be done.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I felt like this was going to go on to like 12 o'clock.
Well, we had fewer series to talk about. We went very quickly through a couple, and also we had no suggestions to do. So
that's true. Fair enough.
See, Chris, when we talk about what a horrible person Hulk Hogan is, we become very efficient.
It seems like it was the contrary. That I was like, man, we wasted like a half hour fucking going off on this tangent. And then apparently no, we're wrapping up. It's not even I haven't even been streaming for 2 hours. That's an efficient use of our time. I'm pretty proud of ourselves.
Nick, we should just keep on congratulating ourselves until we go over 2 hours. Like,
well, you know, that was a fucking thing for a while. It was like I was like delaying the podcast to try to get us over 2 hours, and then it was like a year and a half where we were like 2.5 hours consistently.
Yeah.
So I don't need to do that, Nick. I just want to say, great job, buddy. Internet high five. Put it up there. Let's do it.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, we did it. Somehow, our hands through the internet made the actual sound of a high five. It wasn't one of us just slapping our hands like some kind of novelty foley of any kind, no.
Yeah.
Like fairy tale, our friendship is tangible.
It's the only God that matters.
Yeah. It's a stupid line.
Well, that was my line.
No, they said it too in Fairy Tale.
Did they?
Yeah, they were like...
Really?
Yeah, they said fucking gods don't matter, we don't need them, because we have fucking Fairy Tale and friendship.
God, I thought that I was not stretching for that.
No, that's literally a line from... I don't think verbatim, but that was basically an effect of the chapter. And that's who's like big...
God.
Go in quote. Yeah, sorry, Dick.
Fairy Tale's stupid. Bye!